Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
She'd like to do your husband.
As I said with Joanna, I would do her as well, but we should wait on that because you're still in office. I don't want to cause a problem. Yeah.
Talentless sewer rats, Walters and Whoopi Goldberg, insulting Nancy Pelosi and Paul Pelosi in public on a television show. I'd like to do her. I'd like to do him too. You vermin, you street rat, you talentless nobodies. Now, the reason I'm playing this is not to show you that television is vile or that the most talentless scum of the earth are given prominent places, talentless people who failed in radio like Whoopi Cushion Goldberg, flopped in radio. They put her on a TV show and she disgraces herself, the network, says to Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, I'd like to do you too. And the audience laughs and that rat from New York, Barbara Walters, that gutter rat, laughs and says you'd probably like to do her husband and her. What in the world is going on in my country? Now, what's interesting to me with regard to the attack upon Michael Savage and the distortion of what I allegedly said and the condemnation by the Lilliputians here in San Francisco is pretty apparent to anybody who has a brain. What Whoopi Cushion Goldberg said on that television show was the most despicable thing I've ever heard leveled at a politician. Yet Nancy Pelosi sat there with that fixed puppet face of hers. And I don't know how Paul, who's obviously an honorable guy, could take this from her. Aren't there limits to what a politician has to take? I mean, if I were there and it was my wife and Whoopi Rat Goldberg said a thing like that, I would take her hand, I would take her from the stage and I'd say, I'm not going to sit here. This is like a house of ill repute. You two people stink. You make me want to puke. And I would have walked out of there. But they attack me for standing up for the American people who are fed up with these illegal alien parasites. And they say nothing to Whoopi Cushion Goldberg. Why? Because she's black with a Jewish surname? Does that give her sacrosanct rights to speak as she, whatever garbage comes out of her gutter mouth? So there you go. Talentless, tasteless vermin. Still have a job the next day. Well, life goes on. Life is good. People are wonderful and business is great. That's a bumper sticker. I guess that's what people want to hear today in America. And then a little pornography coming out of the mouths of drug-addicted sex maniacs. That passes for the media today. So what is it you want me to talk about on the Savage Nation today? You want me to talk about the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the nobodies? I played a prayer for the dead for them yesterday. They're golem. They're the walking dead. They have no souls. They shall walk through eternity on this planet. They are repetitions of the ancient evils. As far as I am concerned, I did it already. I'm not going to do it again. And, you know, I had a neighbor. I was riding my bicycle last night after the show. And I said, my neighbor said, what? He said, what a great day it is. What a day. So I said to him, you mean me being attacked by the San Francisco supervisors? He said, no, I mean the weather. I said, haven't you heard that I was attacked by the San Francisco city? He says, oh, my, that's like being rejected from the Book of the Month Club. I had a laugh. I mean, that's what it comes down to. When you think about it, a condemnation by these low-life loser, communist, Bolshevik game players is like being rejected by the Book of the Month Club. You get it? So there are other stories out there. You know, I can talk about me. I can talk about the creeping communism in the United States of America. And make no mistake about it, this is very serious business. Only I don't know if you've been saturated by it yet. I don't think you quite understand what it is, what's going on. Many of you are not aware of how deep and how dangerous this really is. I'll explain it to you in a minute or two, or within a minute or two. Or shall I say I'll explain it using only a minute or two. Let me explain it to you this way. Normally, It is individuals who protest against the actions of the all-powerful governments or government. Rarely, if ever, has it been a government using the power of government itself to attack an individual and try to take his job away. It's almost unheard of in American history, where a government stepped in and tried to get somebody fired because his speech was considered offensive to some people within the government. This is something that went on in the ex-Soviet Union, Miss Alioto Pierre and Mr. Peskin. This is something that the ex-Soviets used to do to dissidents like Sakharov and the others. That is, if they didn't like the message of the dissidents, they used the power of the state to try to deprive that dissident of his livelihood and then use the power of the state to put them into a work camp, which, of course, don't exist yet because you don't have absolute power. But we understand that if lowlifes like you, Peskin, had power, there would be work camps, even worse, because you're a good liberal. And it wouldn't be a work camp, of course, the way Stalin did it. It would be a healthy work camp. It would be good for the conservatives to be forced to work under direction of little men like you. Little eunuchs like yourself would like to run these work camps, wouldn't you? So what you do is you smear people, and then you try to deprive them of their livelihood. And then you go home and you tell your friends what, that you're a progressive and you're for the common good? You're not a progressive. You're a regressive. You're a retrogressive, all of you. And you're dragging this country into the status of the ex-Soviet Union, step by step. And the people have to speak out against these petty Marxists. It's as simple as that. So it's a big story. Now, there are other stories, and I want to show you one of them on my website, michaelsavage.com, not because it's linked to my website. But you've all seen the vile pictures of the sadomasochistic vermin who should be in mental hospitals or prison for what they're doing in public. You have to see the pictures if you haven't to see the real face of evil. Maybe you don't even know how evil it is. And on the website, if you go down a bit on michaelsavage.com, I hope it's still there. I don't even know. I haven't looked at it yet. No, I don't even know what I'm looking for. It's gone. The one story I wanted is already swept off the website. So I forgot what it was that I wanted to talk. Oh, there it was. It's gone. A judge in San Francisco in the most twisted Bolshevik court in the land, the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's, the most frequently overturned court in America. One judge by the name of Breyer, B-R-E-Y-E-R, has decided to disaffect federal immigration law and make it easier for illegals to steal jobs and to steal benefits that are not entitled to them. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out is that Judge Breyer is the brother of the other radical liberal on the U.S. Supreme Court named Breyer. So you got two brothers. One took a one got a job on the U.S. Supreme Court. The other brother has a job on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Am I the only person in America who is about to say to you that any time the Supreme Court hears a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals case, that Breyer should not be permitted to argue it, his vote should be disallowed? Do you understand the danger of having two radical left-wing Bolsheviks like the Breyer boys running this country into the ground because of their left-wing anti-American bias? Do you get this? No. It's too complicated. I understand that. So we'll look at some of the other stories on the michaelsavage.com. How about this one? Pentagon observes Muslim Holy Month. You know, this story makes me feel good to realize how tolerant the Pentagon has become. It's good to see that there's an imam calling members of the Defense Department to prayer in the Department of Defense. I'm glad to hear that over 100 Defense Department employees in a time like this are Muslims. It's good for us to have multiculturalism in the Defense Department. Don't you understand? Because all of them are peace-loving. There's not one in them that Pentagon that I would suspect is a double agent. There's no reason to suspect it. And if you do suspect it, why, you yourself should be suspect to being intolerant. And as you well know, even if a dirty bomb went off somewhere in America, it is better for that one dirty bomb to go off than for one innocent Muslim to be made uncomfortable even for 1 minute. Because that's the American way. That's the brainwashing way, isn't that true? Here's another little story for you from my website. U.S. to admit 12,000 Iraqi refugees next year. With the stroke of a pen, George Bush raised the number of Iraqis coming into America. Now remember, Iraqis coming in without screening. Nobody knows whether they're jihadists. They don't know whether they're members of a militant group. But it makes George Bush look good and feel good in the Muslim world that he's admitting so many Iraqis. And that should give you also a good feeling. Because it wouldn't matter if a dirty bomb went off from one of these Iraqi refugees. The important thing is that we look and feel good to the world. And it is better that a dirty bomb go off in, let us say, Cleveland, than one Muslim be made to feel uncomfortable in the United States of America. And remember that, if God forbid a dirty bomb should be set off in America, you don't want to make any Muslims feel uncomfortable. After all, it wouldn't necessarily be them. It could be a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim, a Hindu who set off the bomb, couldn't it? Why look amongst Muslims? There's no reason to look amongst them. They're no different than any other religion. Isn't that what your child's being brainwashed? Being brainwashed about every day in the schools? Of course it is. And it makes you feel good. And with a little help from the Seltzer boys from New York, sure enough, there'll be a dirty bomb in your future. And if you don't like what I just said, you can lump it. I could care less. Now I'll take your calls. No, I won't. I want to read you an email. Dear Michael, I am a priest in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and I appreciate your intellectual honesty and rigor in your analysis of issues. In particular, he writes, you are the only public figure who has clearly explained what has happened to the Catholic Church in the United States, particularly as it relates to the Lavender Mafia, which has a certain connection to today's San Francisco Board of Supervisors, going back to the mayor called George Moscone. Clearly, the deliberate picture you spoke of taken in front of St. Joseph Church and the lack of response from the church is only the latest example. Now, he's referring to a picture on michaelsavage.com of a naked sadomasochistic vermin hanging in a metal cage in front of the towers of a Catholic church in San Francisco without a peep from the so-called leaders of the Catholic Church. I added that. Now I'll go on. Yet, he writes, just as many faithful Jews remain today after the chastisement of the destruction of the temple, the lesson of Daniel, so too a remnant of Christians will remain should there be another chastisement on a larger basis. Sincerely, Father, and I will not read you his name because I know there will be retributions from the lavender hand should I do so. 1-800-449-8255 phone number, michaelsavage.com website. Topics are whatever you want to talk about. But before we go to break, I want to refer to something that I played yesterday that you must hear again today, which I'll play the minute I come back. We have found a tape from several months ago where Hillary Clinton goes on record when she spoke before the radicals at the COS convention, taking credit for starting the gay fascist website, anti-American website, anti-conservative website, Media Matters. She takes pride in having created this Soviet-styled gay fascist website. I will play the soundbite the minute I come back on the Savage Nation. Savage.
This active and fighting a blogosphere about 15 years ago, because we have, you know, certainly suffered over the last years from a real imbalance in the political world in our country. But we are righting that balance, we're lifting that balance, I'm not sure which, and we are certainly better prepared and more focused on, you know, taking our arguments and making them effective and disseminating them widely and really putting together a network in the blogosphere, in a lot of the new progressive infrastructure, institutions that I helped to start and support, like Media Matters and Center for American Progress. You know, we're beginning to match what I had said for years was the advantage of the other side.
She's a known liar. Her and her husband, as you know, lied through their entire political careers, which is no different than all politicians largely. But their lies cost an awful lot of damage here in this country. Now, the fact of the matter is there is no imbalance in the media other than the imbalance of liberalism, which 90% of the media is liberal. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN are all liberal. So where's the imbalance? What she means is she wants to silence the voices of opposition, such as my own, by using a gay fascist smear sheet called Media Matters, and to distort the statements that we make or twist them and then try to dismiss us as fanatics when, in fact, we're the last hope for the United States of America. But, you know, my mind isn't really on this anymore. Right now I'm on the internet looking at a dinner I'm going to have Saturday night in Florida. And I think I'm going to have, in honor of the supervisors in San Francisco, I'm not going to eat the puttanesca. I'm going to send them a dish of the puttanesca. I'm probably going to have the rigatoni con porcini, wild mushrooms from Italy sauteed with shallot. I'm making a family dinner in Florida Saturday night, and I'm looking forward to the menu already. I think it's amazing with the internet that before you get there, you look at a menu of a restaurant. It's amazing the world we live in. So I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, there's nothing to look forward to. Nothing to look forward to. But anyway, I don't know whether I'll like it. I won't like it. What do you want to talk about? The Catholic Church? You want to talk about Media Matters? You want to talk about the gay fascists in Media Matters? You want to talk about the gays in the Catholic Church and how they've hijacked the entire agenda of the religion, largely in the United States of America? Do you want to talk about, let's see what else I have. Oh, I have yesterday's sound. It's not that interesting. I'm not interested in these people anymore. To me, it's boring. Maybe I could do something else. Let's go to Chicago. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Joe. Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi.
Go, talk. You're on the air. Go, go, go. All right, sir, listen, if you have a problem with verbal masturbation and see if the fireman can help you, just dial 911 and tell them that you have a problem with verbal masturbation and you can't control yourself. Okay, sir? I'm sure the good fireman will help you. WOR in New York. Sue, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. My husband and I are devout Byzantine Catholics. We support you 100%, and we too are disgusted with the silence of the Catholic Church, not only with you, not only with the sadomasochists in San Francisco, Terry Schiavo. They never spoke out. We went down there. We were outside of the hospital. Well,
why didn't Nancy Pelosi, who prides herself on being Catholic, say anything when she had the opportunity to say something about this disgrace in front of the Catholic churches? Go on to michaelsavage.com and look at the picture of the naked people flogging each other in front of a church. So we're talking about the meltdown of your freedoms here in the United States of America. I'd like to point out two excellent bloggers. One is The Liberal Assault on America by John A. Ross. The other is Michael Savage versus San Fran Fascist by Andrew T. Durham. And we have both of those posts up on michaelsavage.com for you to read and peruse and share with your friends and loved ones while you still can before they make blogging that doesn't support Hillary Clinton as goddess of all gods, illegal and anti-American. You know, Jimmy, WOR New York City, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today, sir?
Yes, in the Soviet press, they brag about their influence in the Catholic Church, particularly since Vatican II. And they also talk about their goal to control people's minds by controlling the people, by controlling the media that shapes opinions and beliefs. If you allow me, I'd like to read a couple of sentences directly from the Soviet book I have here.
Hold on, wait, before you do, what Soviet book is this?
This is the 27th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. This is their long-range goals as stated.
But hold on now, what year was it published, Jimmy?
1986, Gorbachev.
Well, how do you know it's still operational?
Because they're meeting their goals.
And okay. Well, let's take it on face value. Let's hear the goals of the Soviet Union's Communist Party. Let's hear.
The Congress notes the growing role of the mass and propaganda media in promoting the party's economic strategy, its social policy, and in cultivating the socialist consciousness. It regards radio, television, and the press as powerful vehicles of publicity and instruments of public control. We must use the mighty ideological potential of television more effectively and heighten the impact of the entire propaganda and information.
Do they mean in the Soviet Union or in America?
Well, they mean worldwide because it's a world movement.
All right, but that's a given. There's really nothing new in that. We all know television's powerful and that it's influential. So how does that apply to the situation going on here in San Francisco or in America?
because you and the other conservative talk show hosts are not following in line with this. They have to get rid of you so they have total control. Because if they have total control of people's minds, they control how people vote, and people think they're voting free and democratically, but they're voting with opinions put in their head by an organized world communist movement. It's revolution by evolution. And the communists also talk about that in their own Soviet publications. They're not
shocked. It's chilling. No, I'm not shocked by what you say. I see it going on, and so do people I know who are quite intelligent, well-read, and experienced. They see it going on step by step, stage by stage, and they understand that although the Republican Party is flawed, ineffectual, impotent, it is at this point a little better than the Democrats. It's socialism light as opposed to socialism heavy. Jimmy, thank you so much for that, and there's nothing more I can say about it. Let's go to Bob in New York City. Bob, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael, Dr. Savage, how do you do?
Good.
Listen, I was born a red diaper doper baby. I'm Jewish. When I was in my late teens, I started realizing there's just something phony about this thinking of my parents and my relatives and buddy. Now I'm a big believer in your radio station. I read Newsmax magazine. And when I tried telling my family, listen, there's Michael Savage, there's Newsmax magazine. You know, you criticize Rush Limbaugh, but you never listen to him for a minute. Just there's a real movement that you should listen to, but they keep telling me to shut up. And I keep telling, look, the real narrow-minded ones are you people. All you read.
Yeah, but you see, you're like Daniel in the lion's den. What they're saying is, don't confuse me with the facts. My communist mind is already made up. Don't you dare tell me to read something I don't want to read. Why, it was written by somebody who we don't agree with. Therefore, I don't want to read it. So, in other words, they're brainwashed people. You're never going to help them. Why do you kid yourself? Because they're family, and you want them to accept you. But they won't accept you, and they won't accept your ideas, Bob. It's the price you're going to have to pay for independent thinking.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I try to tell, like the evidence, for instance, when Bush fired these 10 U.S. Supreme Court justices like 4 or 5 months
ago. No, he fired several U.S. attorneys. You try to tell your relatives that Clinton fired all 93 U.S. attorneys when he took office, right? And what did they say to that?
And I said, you know, the New York Times is one of the lies, because the New York Times didn't make that a sidebar article, the 93 U.S. district.
Of course not. The day Clinton took office, he did something unprecedented in American history. He fired all 93 U.S. attorneys summarily, dismissed them all. It went by without so much as a notice in the press. When Bush dared fire 9 deadbeat left-wing U.S. attorneys, the press went into overdrive saying he was a fascist and this and that. That's because they control 90% of the media, Bob, and the only opposition voices are now being, well, they're trying to smother us with smears and lies using gay fascist websites like Media Matters. Bob, let me send you a free copy of The Political Zoo. It's not going to help you with your family. You may as well write them off. That's all. That's all. Let's move on here. How do you want to talk? How do you want to go today? I don't know what I want to do. Could you play something for me today? I'm going to read you the headlines here. Sun still main force in climate change. Great article. We linked it up from World Net Daily. New study. Now, you don't want to show it to friends in Brooklyn who are red diaper dopa babies, because they would say it was written by right-wing fascists who are controlled by the oil industry. Well, and I guess the Danish National Space Center is now controlled by the oil industry, because after all, it disagrees with Al Gore, who's actually a family that made its fortune in the oil industry. But don't tell that to liberals either. See, Al Gore's dad, Senator Gore, was the chairman of the Occidental Coal Company. But don't tell anybody that either, because then they're liable to say it's kind of odd that a senator who was the president of the Occidental Coal Company would produce a son who was almost president, who is now anti-coal and anti-oil and is in the carbon credit business. But as I said to you yesterday, the Gore family first made its fortune on coal and oil, and now they're going to make their next fortune by selling carbon credits to counter the effects of using coal and oil. But then I can go even a step further and say to you, there's nothing new under the sun, is there? The Truns Meat Company used to slaughter pigs and sell ham and pork and this and that. And they proudly said, we sell everything but the squeal. The same can be said about the Gore family. They sell everything but the carbon itself. They sell the coal, they sell the oil, they sell the carbon credits, they sell the global warming hyperbole. They sell everything but the carbon itself. But I'm sure if there's a way to put it into a little tablet and tell liberals that carbon tablets are good for them, they would. But excuse me, carbon tablets are being sold. Now that I think about it, they're called charcoal tablets and they're used by liberals to detox their intestines. So be it. I guess the Gore family has exceeded the Truns family in selling everything, including the squeal. I just put that together in a kind of fun thing for you. But it shows clearly, this new study from the Danish National Space Center, obviously owned by the oil industry, that the sun still appears to be the main agent in global climate change, according to new research by Danish scientists. The Danish researchers say that the studies that are being used by the global warming hype people rely on surface air temperature, which they say does not respond to the solar cycle. Did you hear that? Now, you have to know a bit of science to even understand this, but since most people who believe in global warming have no science background whatsoever, they're simply goose-stepping liberals who believe anything that they're fed to believe, it's very hard to argue with them using facts. And if you want to read the whole article and other articles debunking global warming is caused by man, you can go onto my website because we're collecting them on a regular basis. And while you're there, peruse some of the mentally most ill people in the world here in San Francisco who were supported by the supervisors and the mayor and Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, who think it's just peachy keen to whip a man in public in front of children and to disgrace the Catholic Church by dangling a woman in a cage in sadomasochistic costumes in order to offend the churchgoers, as important as they may be. They're not as important as the sadomasochists in San Francisco. There are other pictures we have found of men whipping men in public, men dressed up in masks that are right out of The Silence of the Lambs, people tied up in chains, all in a street, and some people brought their children there, thinking it was very diverse, to expose their children to the multiculturalism of San Francisco. Well, in my day, such parents would have been arrested for child abuse, and the children would have been taken away by the state and be put in foster homes. Of course, today, those children are in the vanguard of the new progressive America. God help us all. Now let's go on to the Savage callers here on the Savage Nation. Let us go to Seattle, Washington, my favorite city in the Northwest. Since I never go to the Northwest, it may as well be. I like Seattle. I almost thought of moving there once. I mean, the rain in Spain does fall mainly down the drain, but I did like Seattle on the book tours when I went there. I was thinking of relocating to Washington State, but it's too wet. Martin, KTTH, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I would like to offer my opinion on why it was so important for you to speak out yesterday. The old maxim, the one I like to embrace, is that the only thing evil needs is for good men to be quiet. And that's exactly the major flaw of Mr. George Bush for 8 years. He turns his back. He doesn't address the challenges, the lies that come out of the left for 8 years. And America has just given up believing in this man.
That's right. He's not said one word about the evils of abortion, but to his credit, he did veto infanticide legislation, meaning partial birth abortion. He did veto it. You know, to just bash Bush on every level is redundant at this point. You got to look at some of the good he did because there's so little of it, we may as well talk about it once in a while. His two Supreme Court appointees, although not conservative to any extent, they are center-right, which is better than being communist-left. You'd have to admit that.
Well, there is a crack there, some hope. But overall...
I'll tell you, my biggest problem with Mr. Bush is in the spending policies, which are a fiscal socialism, and in the way he's conducting the war, which is suicidal. You don't send boys into hand-to-hand combat when you have M1A Abrams tanks and F-16s. And if you do, you're committing a criminal act to waste somebody else's sons because you want to fight a politically correct war.
It's also a criminal act to not disclose to the American people that there were weapons of mass destruction. There's credible evidence. Most of those were moved to Syria in Russian trucks. We have a talk show host here in Seattle who personally witnessed. He stood in a room with hundreds of thousands of pounds of yellow cake uranium in Iraq. He has a verifiable medical disability for having been exposed to that radiation. And
so he is, I hear you. I'm not arguing with that. But I don't think the WMD story is the big problem that we have today. To me, the problem is the boys in Iraq who are being sent over there and being maimed for life or killed because George Bush refuses to use the U.S. military the way it was designed to be used. He is, in fact, mishandling and misusing the U.S. military. It is a crime as far as I am concerned. We don't develop these trillion-dollar weapons to not use them. What are they for, to show them on Military History Channel? I mean, what the heck did we develop all these weapons for when he's using the other guy's children to fight hand-to-hand combat in 18th-century warfare? It's insanity. We have an enemy. They're in two strongholds. They're in the Sunni Triangle, so-called, and they're in the Sadr City area. What is this delicacy? What are you afraid of? The Muslim world hates us anyway. They hate us anyway, so what do I care what they think of us? What is he doing there, is what I keep asking myself. Boys are coming home without three limbs, without eyes, with their faces shot off. Why? They don't have to come home this way. Sure, there aren't that many deaths compared to World War II, and that's good for Rush Limbaugh. Rush thinks it's wonderful that the number of deaths are so low. You know, sits and smokes a cigar in his Gulfstream and says, well, why, the number of deaths has not even exceeded that of a battle at Iwo Jima. Oh, that's terrific. That's real good management out there, Rush. General Rush. But Rush is not the problem. Bush is the problem. The problem is a president who pretends to be something that he isn't and conducts a war in a manner that nobody can calculate, can comprehend. And I want to repeat what I've said for several years now. America is fundamentally not so much against the war in Iraq as they are against the way the war in Iraq is being prosecuted by George Bush. And I want to repeat that again. This country was gung-ho for the war in Iraq in the beginning and for several years. But as it dragged on now for 5 years or more, they're starting to say, wait a minute, World War II was conducted more quickly than this. Why is it if we're fighting a group that has no airplanes, no tanks, no heavy weapons, why is it that we can't win? And the answer is because Bush is the most incompetent commander-in-chief in the history of the United States of America. There's no other answer for it. Don't you get it? And if that's the case, then the people naturally say, then let's get out of there. Let's get the heck out of there. But I can guarantee you, if we had a vigorous leader who said, we're going to straighten this mess out, and here's why we have to do it. They're a threat to our security. They're a threat to the world security. Here's the evidence. Here's what we're doing. We're going to take control of this. Kick the media out of there. Black it out like it was in World War II. Get them out of there. Get the communist media out of there. Flatten the enemy. I can guarantee you that the American people would 85 to 90th percentile support such activity. And then bring everybody home. After you've used the tanks and the artillery and the airplanes. And I mean exactly what I said because I've said it for years. You do the following. You know where the strongholds are? The Sunni Triangle and Sadr City. How do you deal with it? Well, you don't kill every living thing in it. You are a humane nation, unlike the animals that you have to kill. They are not humane. They're vermin. They're from the 7th century. They don't believe in the dignity of human life. They're death worshippers. So what you do to the death worshippers is you treat their women and children with kindness. You leaflet the entire district where the insurgency is emanating from, the locus, in other words, of infection. As any good doctor will tell you, what you have to do is find out where the infection is located, the locus of infection. You wire it. You barbed wire it. I don't care how big it is. You barbed wire the whole area. You drop leaflets for a week saying we're going to cluster bomb this area. Get out now. And you let them leave, the women and children. Now, no man is going to leave there with his weapons intact, so you're going to destroy all the weapons. He's not going to leave with his bombs in his hand, is he? So his weapons are going to be left behind. Then when everyone's out is going to get out with their donkeys and whatever, you flatten the area with a bombardment for as many days as it takes. You send in the M1A Abrams to crush it into rubble, and then you rebuild it and make it look like a sane place. And you've solved the problem to the greatest extent. Of course you're going to have to mop up afterwards, as the U.S. military did with the diehard Nazis. But that's a different story than this incompetent handling of the occupation. I'll be back. Savage. You know, I'd really like to spend an hour talking about Rome and Carthage, because I think the struggle between, in 264 BC, between Rome and Carthage, the so-called Punic Wars when they began, have ramifications today between the struggles between the Christian West and the Semitic Middle East. And of course, it's hard to lump things together in such a broad sweep, but I'll do so if you want. The fact of the matter is that I think events that we are witnessing right now and traditions of the past still linger. I think that the vitalities of the past still linger. And I think that they still exercise a complicating and confusing influence upon the controversies that we are facing today. So, I mean, I could talk about the Punic Wars. I don't think it's necessary that we do so. The important thing to know is that although the Carthaginians initially beat the Romans unexpectedly, eventually they were destroyed by the Romans, and it ended pretty poorly for the Carthaginians, because after the Roman army crossed into northern Africa and Hannibal was defeated at the Battle of Zama at the hands of Scipio Africanus the Elder, terrible things happened. Carthage capitulated. She surrendered Spain and her war fleet. She paid an enormous indemnity and agreed to give up Hannibal to the vengeance of the Romans. But Hannibal then escaped and fled to Asia, where he eventually took poison and died rather than to be captured. Well, what was done to Carthage is astonishing when you think about it. There was phenomenal bloodshed, and those who survived were sold into slavery. The city was burned and destroyed. The earth salted.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is a resolution condemning defamatory language used by radio personality Michael Savage against the immigrant community.
Same house, same call. The resolution is adopted.
Well, there it is, the voice of the impotent eunuchs in San Francisco passing another measure that has no bearing whatsoever on reality, making themselves even greater laughing stocks across America, because I'm heard on over 300 stations with millions of listeners, many of whom come to this beautiful city and are ashamed to see the kind of lowlives who call themselves leaders. These are the people who have tried to ban the Blue Angels. These are the same people who have said no to using the Golden Gate Bridge for a recruiting film. And these are the same lowlife filth who salute degeneracy of the lowest order. What goes on in this city in the public square far exceeds any vile behavior that occurred in the Weimar Republic of Germany post-World War I. The Weimar Republic is like a nursery rhyme compared to the degeneracy that is not only glorified in this city, but is literally sold as healthy. So there it is, and now you understand why it is a badge of honor to be attacked by these eunuchs. And it's a big story. It's a very big story. It's way beyond me. Trust me. It's way beyond me. This is a very sick area. I ran into a neighbor the other day who's a very famous surgeon. And he said to me, he said, you know, Michael, your book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, is absolutely right on. He said, I don't even talk to anyone here anymore because they will not reason. They go blind and they start to blink. When you give them facts that are uncomfortable, they will not relate to the facts. They won't reason with the facts. They simply repeat what they believe is reality. And he said, so I keep to myself. Do you understand how dangerous a nation is that is filled with such brainwashed people? I hope you do. I hope you come around to understand that you don't have to agree with what I say most of the time, but you have to agree with the fact that I have a right to say whatever I want all of the time. You can take that and put it into your Abe Lincoln hat and smoke it if you want. Las Vegas, Nevada. Carol, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. Hi, Michael Savage. Thank you for taking the time to speak up for American citizens. We are being affected by the illegal aliens that have infiltrated our society. And all of the people in the government who are not doing their job, they need to remember it is illegal. They need to go in line.
But the officials are illegal. If an official takes the side of non-citizens against citizens and extends public benefits to people who did not contribute to those public benefits, they're in essence thieves and should be arrested. If I had the power, I would arrest any mayor of any city that called itself a sanctuary city. I would start by cutting off federal funds to that city, and if they continued to go around the federal law, I would arrest them. They have no power to override the federal law, period, end of story. And that's a fact of reality. If we had a true leader, which we do not, George Bush would cut off federal funds to San Francisco right now and all sanctuary cities. He could cut federal funds off tomorrow. Believe me, it would bring them around. Now, how do I know it would bring them around? I'll give you an example right here. Yale law, newly defeated, allows military recruiters. For 5 years, Yale Law School has fought to restrict military recruiters from its job fairs because of the Pentagon's policy that bars openly, here we go again, gay and bisexual people from the military. Poor babies. But with the federal government threatening to withhold $350 million in grants, if Yale does not assist the recruiters, that fight will all but end. After an appeals court ruled in favor of the Defense Department on September 17th, the Yale Law School said it would allow recruiters from the Air Force and Navy to participate in a university-sponsored job interview program for law students on Monday afternoon. Do you hear this? So it's all money. If you have the power to withhold federal funding, Mr. Bush, and you don't use it, then in fact, you've taken the side of the opposition as far as I'm concerned. Any city that is a sanctuary city can have its federal funding cut off yesterday by the federal government. And that suddenly all of this grandstanding by these fraudulent liberal mayors would come to a complete halt because it's all about money and it always has been about money. New York City, OR. Donnie, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Well, actually, I was going to talk about an S&M parade in Manhattan, but now you're talking about immigration, so I don't know which way to go.
Let's talk about S&M, because to me, the disgrace of the S&M exhibits in San Francisco, without comment by Nancy Pelosi, is a new low for the American spirit.
Anybody ask her about that? She has no comment, right?
No, she did get asked by it. A very brave young reporter asked her what she would have to say. Guys, dig up that soundbite when Donnie leaves, and we'll play for what she said. You are not going to believe what you hear. What about Whoopi Cushion Goldberg and Barbara Walters saying they'd like to do her and Paul Pelosi on a television show? What do you think about that?
More degeneracy.
But why didn't Nancy Pelosi say that's out of bounds, that's disgusting? Why did she sit there with the puppet smile for?
Yeah, well, she's mute about all this stuff that's, she's just mute.
Not a mute when it comes to pushing the liberal agenda. She's quite vocal. But you, what do you want to say about an S&M parade in New York, Donnie?
Yeah, October 7th. I mean, I don't want to advertise it, but it's disgusting. It's written up in the New York Post Monday. The city's first ever kinky sex street fair will feature open-air flogging, hardcore leather whip types, and punishment fans and cowboy chaps.
All they got to do is go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the sickest people in the entire world. That's all you have to do. Just take a look at them. These are mentally ill degenerates. They should be put into mental hospitals. Those doing the whipping should be arrested. That's the world that I would like to see in the United States of America. These are ill degenerate vermin, and they have no place in a sane, civilized society. That's all I can say about it. But here's Nancy Pelosi when confronted about the S&M parade a week ago. Listen.
Your spokesman told the Bay Area Reporter that the Folsom Street Fair advertisement mocking the Last Supper would not harm Christianity. I'm wondering if you find that advertisement personally offensive. And as a follow-up, the city's grants for the arts program funded by the city's hotel tax is subsidizing the fair. Do you think that it's fair to tax everyone who visits San Francisco and stays in a hotel to support that kind of activity?
Well, that's not really a local question. That's a constitutional question. That's a religious question. That's as big as global a question as you can ask. I'm a big believer in First Amendment, and therefore, as I said in my statement, I do not believe that Christianity has been harmed by the Folsom Street Fair advertising.
She doesn't believe Christianity has been harmed by the Folsom Street Fair advertising. Go on to michaelsavage.com and see if you agree with her. And number two, she's a big believer in the First Amendment. How come she's had nothing to say about the Board of Supervisors trying to take away my First Amendment rights? Answer, because she's a hypocrite like all liberals and like all Democrats in particular. That's the reality that we're living in right now. Now, here's another report coming out of San Francisco. There's a local town called Fairfax, which is about the meanest, small-minded place in America. And the city of Fairfax has banned people from washing their cars at home for environmental reasons. But if you saw the filth that lives in that city, in that town, the mental filth that lives in that town, you'd be shocked that they don't let them wash their cars, because most of them should have their brains washed with brown soap. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One thing is for sure, we're not drinking Carthaginian wines, and we don't go to Carthaginian restaurants, that's for sure. I mean, we all go to Italian restaurants because they won. Now that I think about it. I mean, why are Italian restaurants so popular when I think about it? Because they won the battle. They beat them in the Punic Wars, that's all. The rest is history. You're not eating Carthaginian food. You're eating Italian food for a reason. To the victor belong the restaurants. It's as simple as that. So that it's to be seen who'll be going to restaurants 1,000 years from now. What kind of restaurants your descendants will be going to? Whether they'll be going to Iraqi restaurants or IHOP. I mean, we have to think about that. Jack on WFTL, where I'm going to visit next week, Fort Lauderdale. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
You know, I find it peculiar that the gays always make fun of the Catholics. I see them in Key West wearing the Catholic bishop's outfit, the cardinal outfits, and yet the Islam has tremendous prejudice against homosexuality and homosexuals, and actually executes homosexuals, and they never do this in front of a mosque. They never mock Muhammad. Why do you think that is?
Well, you answered the question yourself when they said the Muslims execute homosexuals in Iran. Because they're afraid of them. They're not afraid of the Catholics. The Catholic Church has ceased to exist as a force for morality in America. Yes, there are millions of moral Catholics who take their religion seriously. And there are thousands of leaders within the Catholic Church who are wonderful people. But as far as the hierarchy goes, there is no leadership to speak of other than the Pope himself, who speaks out as often as he can for the good of mankind, as far as I can tell. But as far as militancy goes, the Catholic Church is not militant enough, and that's why they're stepped upon and, frankly, vilified by the homosexual radicals who are, as you well know, on a warpath against Christianity and Catholicism in specific. The reason they're against Catholicism is because it's the last stronghold of the Christian religion. The other religions have already rolled over to the homosexual agenda.
Well, they also
that'll be on Meteor Matters tomorrow. Meatier Matters, not to be confused with Hillary Clinton's Media Matters. It will be on Meteor Matters where they cover these sorts of things. 1-800-449-8255. Is there any other topic we could talk about? It's too early for Rock and Roll Friday. On Friday, I'm flying to Florida. On Saturday, I'm having dinner with family in Florida. On next week, I'll be on local station in Florida, and I'm going to come back next week to California. So it's a quick trip before the big holiday rush, you know, down there. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm already on the wine list of the restaurant I'm going to go to. I think it's amazing that you can look at a wine list from afar. The problem with the wine list is it doesn't have the years of the wines. I mean, what's the good of seeing that it's a certain, you know, kind of wine without a date? How can you look up the value of the Pouilly Fuissé? I don't like Pouilly Fuissé. I like Pouilly Fumé. There's one good thing about the fact that France is now our ally. I can drink French wine again without guilt. For a long while, I had to hide. I had to be a Murano French enophile as opposed to a xenophile or a xenophobe or a xenophile. It depends upon which perspective you're coming at it. But as a French enophile, to a certain extent, I still prefer beer to anything. My favorite drink, alcohol, is still a beer. Not because I don't have a refined palate, I do. It's just that I get sick from every wine I've been drinking for the last year, and no matter what I do, it doesn't help. It's just my body has changed over the years. Please, now I'm going to get the callers. Mike, I have the secret that there's no secret. There's no secret, that's all. The secret is beer is better for me because I don't get a hangover. And no matter what I drink, I open the great bottle of French red that I had in my basement. I have wines I've had for years. Case is a good wine. I tried one on a rainy day. It was nice going down. The next day, I wished I was dead. There was nothing you could do about it. And you drag yourself around, forget about it. So, but the other people at the table will like this. I'm going to select for them. I'm picking a red and a white and a pink and a yellow and a blue and a green. I already picked the I don't even want to go to the dinner now that I know it's there. I think I'll wind up going to a Japanese restaurant instead of Italian. Okay, all right, here we go. Houston, Texas. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Dr. Savage. It's a privilege to speak with you. I didn't always live in Houston. I'd like to talk to you about the second gayest city in America, the second stronghold, Philadelphia. I lived there until I was 18, and there's a fair there that is promoted as a family event. It's called the Columbus Day Fair and Parade. Little do you know, when you show up there, there are people of the same types there were at the fair in San Francisco, and this is promoted as a family event. My parents brought me there as a small child, and me and my little younger brother left crying. It was the most disgusting thing we ever saw, and we never went back.
But wait a minute. I got to ask you something. Your parents took you there?
They were not familiar with the area. We had just moved there, and they did not know the reputation of the parade. It was advertised as a family event, so they thought it would be a good
event. That's how devious the bondage community, if you want to call them that, the bondage sickos are. They are very clever in infiltrating and destroying families. They're like human viruses. They're viruses with leather on it. And, of course, anyone who brings a child to such an event knowingly should be arrested and the child taken away by the state. A child would be better off being brought up in a foster home than being brought up by parents who think it's multicultural to take a child to a leather parade. That's my opinion. Really? Am I entitled to that opinion, or is that hate speech? Maybe the S&M crowd can now demand that I be fired for calling their acts despicable and disgusting, that they ought to be arrested. Maybe they can try to get me fired. Maybe they can join the supervisors can condemn me again. Same issue, same vote, it passes. What do I care? That's all. What do you want to talk about? This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let me go on to my own website. There were some stories that I did see put up on the site today that the excellent webmaster put up. Let's see. San Francisco versus Michael Savage versus San Fran fascist. The liberal assault in America is up there. Click here to view more pictures of SF sickos. Federal judge blocks immigration enforcement measures. And that is Mr. Breyer, whose brother's on the U.S. Supreme Court, is the most, I can't say the most extreme left-winger, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the most extremist left-winger, former chief counsel for the ACLU. But Mr. Bowtie Breyer has a brother on the Supreme Court. Both of them are red diaper doper babies who are dragging America over the cliff. They're like lemmings, these people. Underneath it is a story from the New York Sun called The Islamist Trojan Horse. I really suggest you read that one. Mexican flag illegally flown above American flag at Reno nightclub. And, of course, Jim Broadson cut down the American flag because the Mexican flag was flying above it. I totally agree with that. In fact, anyone who waves a Mexican flag in America is committing an act of hostility towards this country, as far as I am concerned. And I think that anyone who puts a Mexican flag above an American flag is fundamentally engaging in a fighting act. They're daring us to take down the flag of their socialist third world cesspool. And we will do so gladly.
Savage.
Like to do your husband.
As I said with Joanna, I would do her as well, but we should wait on
you,
that.
You garbage can with a mouth. You disgraceful, filthy little garbage can, Whoopi Cushion Goldberg. They should throw her out on a... What a disgrace that Barbara Walters always was nothing. A Brooklyn loudmouth. But at least she wasn't degenerate. She was just what she was, you know, a sewer mouth. But now to bring this trash can with a face, Whoopi Cushion Goldberg, who says, I like to do her and her husband, to Nancy Pelosi and her husband, and they sit there with straight faces. It's unbelievable to me what passes for comedy, what passes for entertainment, what passes for civility, and what is accepted by politicians astonishes me. And yet here I speak out for the American people, saying that illegal aliens should get out of my country because they're breaking the law. And I say it in a different way, in a satirical way, and they try to have me thrown off the air. I'll let you decide what reality is and what reality you want your children to live in. KNEW, San Francisco. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, if you were president of the United States, who would be your vice president? Have you considered Bernie Ward?
Nah, it would be General Pace. It would either I would accept General Pace or General Petraeus running for the VP.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you. I don't know who he referred to. I have no idea who that individual is that he mentioned, but I gave you my choice. I think it's somebody who has an ice cream truck that goes around kiddie areas and has pictures inside. I don't know who that person is. Somebody with an ice cream truck with dirty pictures inside. Who is that person he was talking about? Pentagon observes Muslim Holy Month. Navy Imam Chaplain Abu Hina M. Saifulislam lifted his voice to God as he called to prayer more than 100 Department of Defense employees Monday at a celebration of Ramadan at the Pentagon. God is most great, sang the lieutenant commander and Islamic leader in Arabic as iftar, the end of the daily fast, began. Uniformed military personnel, civilians, and family members faced Mecca and knelt on adorned prayer rugs, chanting their prayers in quiet invocation to Allah. Now, I want to ask you something. If you have a religion where the people face Mecca and pray to Allah, do you think that that belongs in the Pentagon? Is that a religion that you would accept as a valid religion for the Pentagon to be holding services for? Deputy Pentagon Chaplain Army Major Alan Palmerville, a Christian, said, "We do all we can to help meet the religious needs of our soldiers. The leadership of the Defense Department wants to care for the body of the whole soldier." As the Pentagon celebrated Ramadan, the White House is in preparations for an iftar feast tomorrow, said Lieutenant Commander Saifulislam, who will be participating at the White House events. Wait, here we go now. President and Mrs. Bush host an iftar dinner every year because they want people around the world to know how much they respect Islam and the many Muslims living in the U.S. who are free to worship as they want and are an integral part of our society, said Gordon Jandro, spokesmouth for the White House National Security Council. Defense officials could not readily provide current estimates of the number of Muslim service members, but said the department works diligently to provide spiritual counseling and guidance to service members of all faiths. You know, it gives you a warm feeling in the center of your body to know that our government is so sensitive to Islam. I think that they should go a step further and celebrate sadomasochism in the White House with a special sadomasochistic parade on the White House lawn in place of Easter Sunday. They should have an S&M parade because, after all, they want to make those in the military who engage in S&M comfortable, and they don't want to be exclusionary. They want to make sure that everybody is included. George Bush wants an inclusionary government and an inclusionary nation. So I think that they should definitely celebrate the S&M Holy Day. In fact, I think we should go a step further and have an S&M Holy Month so that most Americans who are bigoted, uptight Christians and Jews who have a stick up their butts and are not with it and cool and flexible enough can be opened up, as it were, opened up to the wonders of S&M and bondage. Kansas City, Cole, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, sir, I'm a conservative, but at the same time, I'm also an atheist. And I was wanting to know, where do I fall in? Do I fit that title, the conservative?
I don't care. I'm not proselytizing for any religion.
Well, it really it gets the case because I hear all the times that, you know, conservatives are usually Christians, and I don't.
Not true. It's not true at all. Look at Nancy Pelosi. Look at Hillary Clinton. Look at Barack Obama. Look at John Edwards. They're all Christians. They're not conservatives. So religion has nothing to do with conservatism. I would say that family values have a lot to do with religion, and anyone who's not following a family values agenda is not really following their religion, because a religion is all about family values if it's about anything.
Okay, but at the same time, they're also, they say that they're Christians, but then they let things like these parades.
But I don't care. I mean, if a person's an atheist, then what does it have to do with me? It's your choice whether to worship or not. We live in a free country.
I agree with that. I mean, but they
to me, what matters is whether a person understands what's going on in this country politically and how dangerous the liberals are with regard to their attempt to take away individual rights and impose state rights over individual rights. That's the big issue in my life.
Well, the issue is that they want to destroy Christianity, but Christianity is the foundation of Western civilization. I mean, look where it's gotten us. Without Christianity, the monasteries, and we'd still be in the Dark Ages.
Well, don't tell that to Barbara Boxer. It's liable to offend her. Don't tell that to any of the Christians running for office who like to show Bibles but refuse to acknowledge the fact that Christianity is the founding religion of the United States of America. That's why they're politicians, and that is what the word politician means, which is people who parse words and never tell anybody the truth. They tell everybody what they think they want to hear.
Well, I served in Iraq.
Anyway, that's the story. What can I do about that? Palm Springs, Jaron, you're on the Savage Nation. Jaron, you're on.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I just have a quick question for you. Would it not be considered indecent exposure with regards to the parade in San Francisco as to the effect of imitating a sexual activity in public?
They weren't imitating sexual activities. They were whipping people in public. They were flogging people in public. That, to me, is beyond comprehension. Now, you have to ask the mayor of the city, who's a very highly moral man, as you well know. He had an affair with his campaign manager's wife while they were still married. He's a very, very highly upstanding man, Annie Tusum Newsom. He's married homosexuals because he says that that's their right. So I would say direct it to him, because if he believes flogging people in public is a family value, I can't help you with that one.
But isn't that a more of a state law, or is that actually just...
I don't know. Ask Police Chief Heather Fung. Maybe if she lifts up the visor of her cap, which has fallen over her eyes every time she stands up, she might take a look around and see what kind of sickness and illegal activity is occurring in her city, such as beating people in public. I would think that that's an offense of some kind, but that would be up to the police chief, a district attorney, a mayor. But we don't have a police chief, a district attorney, or a mayor who respect family values, do we? In this or any other city that I can tell. Sure, there are some cities in America which would never permit this kind of verminous filth to go on, but not in the big cities. After all, these are sanctuary cities where anything goes.
Yeah, you're talking to one that lives in one. But
Where do you live? Palm Springs, California?
Palm Springs, California, yes.
Oh, sir. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those motels fill up with some of America's finest a few times a year, don't they?
White party. It's pretty nasty. I hate when they come into town. It's not, you know, I can't sit here and condemn them for the way that they live, but I certainly can, you know, sit here and say I don't want to see it on my streets.
That's because you're a bigot. You're not diverse enough, Jaron. You see, you haven't come to understand how wonderful such diversity is. If you'd open up your mind a little bit to the wonders of sadomasochism, flogging, bestiality, homosexuality, you'd be a much more complete American, Jaron, particularly the American that's coming under Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think
it should be a crime, frankly, to not embrace S&M. And I think that after Hillary Clinton becomes president, it should be part of every first grader's curriculum. Since they've been taught that homosexuality is a norm, I think the next step would be bestiality. And to tell a child that if they feel like having sex with their cat, they should do it. because if it feels good, they should do it. They shouldn't be bound by any such thing as Christian values or Jewish values. If they feel like sleeping with a cat or a dog, they should do so. It would be the natural thing, because if you feel it, it must be natural. And if it's natural, it must be good, Jared. That's the way it goes. Isn't that the way we're brainwashed today? If it feels good, do it.
That's what the media and the politicians are establishing in our country nowadays. No one has the guts to stand up and say, look, this is wrong. And the politicians...
That's right. That's why they're attacking me in San Francisco. Because I say it's wrong. I say they're wrong. I say they're criminal. I say these people are mentally ill and criminal who conduct themselves in public this way. I say the police department has failed us. I say the mayor is a clown. I say the supervisor should be arrested for permitting this. I say people who whip each other in public should be put in prison. No wonder they passed an edict against me, because I stand for everything good and they stand for everything indecent and immoral. What can I do about it, Jaron, other than speak out? The politicians won't do it, which is why they're trying to take down talk radio, particularly conservative talk radio. We're the last link between family values or sanity, if you want, or decency, and the absolute decline and fall of America.
I couldn't agree with you more. I would say even on both sides of the aisle, that's the problem. No, they're making...
That's right. Wouldn't you expect the Republicans to speak out? There is no Republican Party in San Francisco. They're non-existent. There's no Republican Party in the state of California. You never hear from them. They don't exist. When it comes to family values, they don't exist. When it comes to morality, they don't exist. Decency, they don't exist. And all we'll hear about is the Republican with the wide stance. Well, so what? There are always people who make mistakes in both parties. That doesn't mean that it's the institution of the Republican Party itself that stands for the wide stance. Thank you for the call. That was a play on words that was not intended. So what is it you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? You want me to debunk global warming for you? Do you want me to debunk sadomasochism for you as a family value? Do you want me to expose the Breyer boys for their extreme liberalism, which I've done so? Do you want me to talk about the Islamist Trojan horse, which has now invaded the Defense Department and the U.S. military? I'll do that for you if you wish. You can read the article from the New York Sun. It's on michaelsavage.com. It goes like this. We're fighting them there. It's written by one of my favorite writers, Yusuf Ibrahim. He says, we're fighting them there so we don't have to fight them here, has become a hymn for the American right and an abominable lie to the left. But drowned out by all the noise is the fact that, quote, they are here already, having landed a long time ago and gotten very busy indeed constructing the American wing of jihad. Go and read that. It's a very, very good article for you libs to read, because one day you're liable to wake up with a sword over your neck and not know how it happened overnight. I'll be back.
Savage.
Welcome to the world of paleo patriotism, the Savage Nation. The little idea of patriotism, I realize how quaint it is to you liberals who believe in an internationalism and how we're all brothers and sisters created by the same goddess. I understand all of that. Here are reader posts in reaction to the San Francisco Supervisors Condemned Savage on the World Net Daily article. And as you know, the slander on me was created primarily by Gerardo Slandoval. A supervisor here in San Francisco, Gerardo Slandoval, apparently is not a popular man amongst the people. Here are some of the comments from readers. Shielded from reality in his liberal enclave, Slandoval has lost all sense of reality. Savage is right, liberalism is a mental disorder, and Slandoval, with his fellow board of idiot supervisors, require urgent therapy. I've been following this story for a bit now, writes another person. From what I understand, the council actually removed Ed Jew due to the fact that he would not vote with them on the resolution. The way they went about removing him was shameful, to say the least, a technicality due to where he lived. He changed residences to care for an ill family member. Once he was out of the way, it was time to vote again, and guess what happened this time? Now we shall see what happens next. I must say, though, that I am not surprised in the least that the Democrats have joined in. When will the real Democrats take back their party? Since the late 1960s, it has been raped by the liberals, socialists, and progressives. When will enough be enough? That's a good one. Slander Vell and his lack of appreciation for American values and life should be included in the next trailer load of illegals I catch and send back deep into the bowels of Mexico where they came from, writes another person. Here's another one. Liberals love free speech until they disagree with you, and then they'll do whatever they can to shut you up. This is just another example of liberals trying to silence conservatives because they don't like their views. Here's another one. What a disappointment. Why are the citizens of San Francisco letting Slander Vell do the irrational things he is doing? Michael Savage should tell them where to go, and it is not heaven. Here's another one. Slander Vell and his ilk are the terrorists in this country that Ted Kennedy, head domestic terrorist, referred to in his recent attempt to attach the hate speech amendment to the military funding bill. That was directed toward anyone who disagrees with the liberal homosexual media and their political compadres. Once again, Slander Vell demonstrates his own hatred and intolerance toward anyone whose views disagree with his own. These left-wing fascists are succeeding in taking away free speech from our country. Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, et al. Will soon be nothing but a dim memory in history if American people don't wake up and do something about it. One may or may not agree with these pundits, but they have a right to speak their minds just like anybody else. Shall I read one more? They take Savage's comments out of context, then condemn the out-of-context words and label them as hate speech. Savage is against illegal aliens, nothing more. But this is yet another attempt to misrepresent someone and politically assassinate him. If you look into this and hear the comments as originally said, you will see this is pure hyperbole meant to shut someone who doesn't agree with them. This is total BS and more in a very long line of public smear campaigns. Michael Savage is no idiot with his two master's degrees and PhD, but he does use hyperbole to get his points across at times. Anyone who agrees with public officials instigating a mob to intimidate a radio host, then use their public office to misrepresent and demonize someone for using free speech that isn't hateful, needs to be fired and sued into financial ruin. This is madness, yet this is the current state of America. These are reader posts in reaction to San Francisco supervisor condemned Savage from the WorldNet Daily article that was very well written by my good friend Joe Farah on WorldNet Daily, which I highly recommend. If you'd like to comment on this and other cases, you can call us at 1-800-449-8255. Or you can go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at what we have up there, all the stories that I got to and didn't get to yet. Chicago, Illinois, Mary, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just heard this on the radio as I was listening to your show that Oakland is a suburb of Chicago and the school district just voted to add a Ramadan holiday to the school year.
Isn't that touching? I think that's so touching and so inclusive and multicultural. I think all good little Christian and Jewish children should be forced to become Muslims for a day in order to experience the wonders of the religion of peace. And they could even go so far as to kneel down and perhaps let Muslim students put wooden swords on their neck to show them how they're treated in certain Muslim countries. Because that would be a full understanding of the religion of peace, wouldn't it, Mary?
Oh, it would be beautiful, wouldn't it? You know, my children.
Yeah, I don't think that'll occur, though. I think they'll be given the hogwash that it's a religion of tolerance and peace, and how up until very recent times, until the evil Jews took Palestine away from the peace-loving Palestinians, all Muslims got along and danced the Middle East dance with Jews and Christians in peace and harmony. I believe that's the message that you'll see in textbooks. Of course, it's a complete reality break, but that shouldn't stop the teachers from imposing it on students. And I would think that if one of the mean school moms to say that your child has ADD or ADHD, or they can come up with a new illness instead of attention deficit disorder, it could be Muslim attention deficit disorder, meaning that your child cannot focus sufficient on the Quran to learn, and therefore he must be drugged. It could be called MAD, Muslim Attention Deficit Disorder, MADD. And any child who suffers from Muslim Attention Deficit Disorder, MADD, would have to be called before a school mom, some mean face, clipped-haired type of personality. And whether the parents want it or not, that child should be put on a drug. A drug as mild as Ritalin or as mild as Prozac, perhaps, or something stronger. Maybe taken away from the parents to be sent to a state re-education program. Because, you know, MAD is a very, very evil disease, Muslim Attention Deficit Disorder. And unless you pay attention to them, their religion, their holidays sufficiently, you're just not a good American. You're not fair-minded or multicultural or, well, just not good.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I was out walking over the weekend. It's amazing to me how far the city of San Francisco has fallen. 30 years ago, you used to be able to walk in the city without stumbling over a bum or a drug addict. Now it's not possible to do so. You either run into a junkie or a pair of girlfriends holding hands who should have wide load signs on their behinds. It's not a place where you can take a simple walk anymore. Even shops that used to be run by old Italian guys are now sex shops. It's unbelievable to me. Shops run by guys who wouldn't be caught dead in the lingerie section in a department store are now being taken over by sex shops. Our manufacturing base is now in China, so we have an economy based on sex shops and psychiatrists. No wonder the radical Muslims hate us. Play some music. They're all over the streets here. They came to San Francisco. Drive down Turk Street, you'll see where they are. Well, other than the hippies who became the supervisors, take a look at the streets of the city, what they do to the poor here. They make believe they care about the homeless. They don't care about the homeless. If they were truly humane, they would round up the homeless. They would give them the treatment that they need, which is a good bath, first of all. They'd burn their clothing. They would put them on Thorazine or whatever the current crop of chemicals is to stop the psychosis. They would feed them, and then they'd make them work for their living instead of sitting around and making movies about the homeless experience. But the phony liberal is the empty liberal. The empty liberal, they're full of rhetoric and hot air. They don't really care about the poor or the homeless. They use it as a fulcrum to get attention and to get ahead in society and make a living off them. You know, I drove last night down this Van Ness Avenue. If you're not from here, you don't know where it is. I've never seen more bums in my life, more than when I first got here in 1974, and dirtier and more wrecked than in 1974. And they're a product of the whole hippie come to San Francisco with a flower in your hair. But there are good things. There are hardworking people. There's great food. There's great food. I mean, from the fish piccata I had the other night in my friend's restaurant. I mean, great Italian food. And then I had a corned beef sandwich last night, which I have once a year. I was in like a depression after yesterday's show because of the terrible news and the disconnect between the ruling elite, so-called, and what's going on in the world. The New World Order, the managers of the New World Order scare me to death because of the movie The Skull and Bones, to realize how vacuous they probably are. The fact that dollars roll as the world's reserve currency is eroding because of the trade imbalance with China, and so that the oil-producing zillionaires are starting to hedge their bets against a further fall in the dollar, and they're demanding euros and British pounds instead. These are worrisome events. Don't you understand that? So I figured, since it all may come down faster than I think, and I won't die an old man in bed, I may as well have a corned beef sandwich. That's how I evaluated it. So I drove to the depths of a place I know on Van Ness. I never saw such bums in my life. You literally need a pair of galoshes to walk past the filth in the street, and B, an armed guard to go in and out to go to your car. You take your life in your hands. This is not a city that I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I don't get it. They could clean this up. They can get the bums off the street. Most tourists hate it. But you talk about hippies, you know. The ultimate hippie is a dog. A dog lives like a hippie when you think about it. That's why we love dogs. It's the hippie within all of us. The difference, though, is that a dog doesn't vote. And doesn't vote in Nancy Pelosi. A dog just lays there and wants to be fed like a hippie. A dog just wants to play all day just like a hippie. And we're happy to let a dog play and feed it all day long. because it provides something to us. It gives us loyalty, which a hippie doesn't. You know, it doesn't use drugs, so therefore it's a reliable hippie. A dog is a reliable hippie. The druggies are not. They're red diaper doper babies. Matthew, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
May I first start by saying thank God for Michael Savage. Finally.
Well, yeah, well, you have to thank someone. You may as well start with my mother and father and then go to God. Okay, thank you. And what's on your mind?
I finished burying my dog, the best dog of 13 years, in a local
wash. Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. Where'd you bury him?
I buried her in a wash nearby here in Tucson, Arizona.
You buried her where?
In a wash, a nearby wash amongst some mesquite and also some other trees.
And what happened?
Away. Now, the point of my subject is that as I was burying her and filling in, and I had her son, her daughter, and her doggy husband in presence, this sheriff rolled up on a four-wheeler, and he asked what I was doing, and I told him. He proceeded to write me a ticket for burying my dog on public lands. And I'm calling to ask you, Mr. Savage, Dr. Savage, what kind of country are we living in where we are going to give someone a ticket for burying a beloved member of their family? Not a human being, mind you.
Well, according to the Drudge Report, which I've known for a while, one in every 32 adults in this country is either in prison, on probation, parole, or in jail. I have said on this show many times that we're living in a modified police state, where anyone listening to this show is only one step, one accident, one mistake away from going to jail. We live in an overregulated, overpoliced nation where the middle class is increasingly under attack by too many regulations and too many people carrying guns. You are an example. I'm surprised the sheriff didn't call for backup and push your face into the ground, take your other dogs away, and have them euthanized.
I'm surprised at that as well, Dr. Savage.
I'm surprised that the brave sheriff didn't call for backup the minute you asked him a question. Now, in my day, the policeman might have come by because his job is to stop when something like this is going on. You could have been burying your wife, for example, or something like that. I'm not trying to be funny. And he could have said, what are you doing? And he's like, okay, I'm burying my dog. And the policeman would have gone away and say, I'm sorry about it. And that would have been the end of it. Why he had to write you up is probably because he had to cover his own back. If he didn't write you up, somebody could have reported that they saw you burying a dog, and this sheriff stopped and he didn't write you up. The sheriff could have lost his job. Why? You could blame the scum lawyers for doing that. I wouldn't even blame the sheriff. The scum lawyers who wrote the rules made the sheriff give you the ticket, by the way.
I'll tell you why it is, Dr. Savage. Because every local business within 100 miles of Tucson, Arizona, wants to charge minimum of $75 to $100 to dispose of.
Oh, I see. It's a business. You were burying your dog without a license. You violated the guild. The guild of dog barriers.
But he's got to make money off of my heart.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. What a world. In the old days, people buried their relatives in their backyard. You know, and I'm talking of a guy who had a large enough farm. They had a little graveyard up on the hill in their own homestead, and they put their ancestors there. They didn't have to go to anybody for it. But today, it's a different world today. I really don't know what to do, Matthew. When did you bury her?
About 2 hours ago.
You're still in a state of shock. Well, go home and, you know, have a drink and play with your other dogs. What can you do, Matthew? What can you do about the way of all flesh, Matthew? What can you do about it? It's a pet. It's heartbreaking. They're better than people, many of them. We understand that. And they touch us when they go. But what can you do about the sequence called life? What can you do? Every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. That story has come to an end in the physical plane, Matthew. But it has not come to an end in the spiritual plane. You understand that, of course, as well, don't you?
Yes, Dr. Savage, which is why I've written on the back of my van for the last 3 months in 12-inch letters, listen to the Savage Nation on KNST AM 790 from 4 to 7 p.m.
Well, let me ask you something. Now that we've covered this, Matthew, and you're upset, what are you going to do with yourself right now?
Like you you said, I'm going to go home, have a wonderful glass of Pinot Noir, and play with my other dogs. And I tell you, they're feeling it.
They sell Pinot Noir in Arizona?
Well, it's a.
I'm joking. I was joking. I was going to go further and said that I didn't know they were allowed. They allowed it over the border there. But all right, you've got a good sense of humor. What can you do? How old was she, Matthew?
She was 13 years old.
Well, that's, you know, what, seven? They used to say each year in a dog's life is 7 years in a human. That's not true anymore. Some of them live to 20 now. The little ones live to 20, 21, 22. They go on and on and on. I know a man, a nice man I know, owns an Italian restaurant in San Francisco. He spent $45,000 on his dog to cure it of cancer. Would you believe it?
I believe
it was a mutt, no less. He loved his dog, and he's no fool. He's not a big, you know, soft-hearted fool. He's a tough guy. He knows what he's doing. But he has a heart of gold, and he loved this animal. So he didn't care what it cost him for repeated treatments to save the dog. Thank you. It's a new world. The world that we live in, what can you do? What should you spend your money on anyway? Savage. Time. Keep singing it, Fats. It's getting bluer and bluer as we get further and further into fall. But in 07, this isn't just any fall. It's a decline in fall. It's a steady decline and a steady fall over the last generation from the peak of American power and the peak of American culture to the current state of gutless leaders and mindless celebrities that we have today. Summer is over. Winter is coming. Now is the winter of our discontent. It's not the nuclear winter that the liberals thought would come 30 years ago. It's a moral winter. It's a cultural winter. It's a national winter. So get your trench coats out, because it may be a long time before we see the sun again. The liberals love it. The farther we fall, the louder they laugh. They hate America, but they won't be laughing the day we hit bottom. They'll be cowering as the enemy comes for them. Play it again.
Blue Monday, how are you? Time to play.
Listen to this headline. Are we prepared for many more people living to 100 and beyond? For parent-child dynamics, sibling rivalries, and other relationships that go on and on and on? Question mark. What are they implying? That we should kill off the old because they're of no use to the sexually liberated? Are they insane? What kind of headline is that? Are we ready for it? What do you want to do, turn them into fertilizer? Then they show an old dude, they're 100 years old, still practicing law in Boston. You know, I actually made a note. This is very inspiring because it means I could be in talk radio for another 50 years. He's still with his son practicing law. Here they are. He had a heart attack 40 years ago, and he's still practicing law at 100. I like that because when my father got a heart attack, I remember I was so freaked out, and I went to the hospital, and it was like, you know, no one knew much about heart attacks then. And the doctor, we were hanging there, he was our only breadwinner. We had no medical insurance, nothing. And he said to us, a heart attack is like a blowout in a tire. We can patch it up, son, and put it back on the family car, but we don't know when that tire may blow out again. That was very reassuring. You know, I was an insomniac from that moment on for the rest of my life. I love that story that he's 100, and he's still practicing law. He started practicing law in 1923, I hear. According to this article here, when Ruby started practicing law in 1926, his clients were young men, many of them Jewish immigrants working what was then Boston's thriving garment business. Today, the firm has shrunk to a bare-bones staff of two, Ruby and Bill, that's his son, who work out of an office otherwise known as Ruby's living room. He's 100 years old. Bill is 73, that's the son. I love this guy. He enjoys pinstripe suits. Devotes a few hours each day to trusts and estates, keeping his family business alive. It added years to my life reading this story for three reasons. A, people are working longer because your brain doesn't go unless you want it to go. If you hate your children enough, you'll get Alzheimer's at 50. Or if you hate your wife enough, you get Alzheimer's at about 43. Oh, what? Honey, I'm putting on your brassiere and slippers now. Anything to avoid sleeping with you. Where am I, huh? Who's that horrible child? I don't want to know. I'm going to put... You get Alzheimer's at 46 if you have the wrong wife. But if you're blessed, you could keep working until you die. If your mind doesn't go, really. The mind is the last thing to go. Unbelievable. Still walks to work, walks home from work. So there's two things I like. Ruby did miss several months of work about four decades ago when he suffered a heart attack. 40 years ago? He's still working at 100? So that means if I get a heart attack soon, I could still live like another 40 years. Because I said, my father, God rest his soul, when he got the heart attack, that doctor should rot in hell. The blowout story. Yes, we have put a patch on an inner tube, young savage. However, we do not know how long that patch may hold. Never slept another night in my life. Not another night did I sleep all through the night. All night long, I listened to my own heartbeat. Thump, thump, you know, waiting for the blowout. That rat. That doctor, those. They didn't know from anything. Nothing, morons. You know, smoke a Chesterfield. Your doctor does. I don't know if they know any more today. They still don't give you any good advice. You think they tell you about homocysteine and B6 and niacin? Nothing. They still tell you nothing. They still tell you nothing. Just burn, cut, and poison. That's all. That vitamin stuff is all hogwash, believe me. Just follow us and we'll cut you open when you need it. The medical establishment is still backwards. There's still a bunch of bloodthirsty, greedy fools mostly. Not all. About 98%. You got to make a buck. Look, when you turn a profession like that, think about it, into a business, where the more sick the person is, the more money you make. You think you're going to make someone well unless you're a saint? And how many saints are there in any business? Can you imagine if I do this for another 50 years or so? Can you imagine what that'll be like? You're liable to be a grandfather. You could be 15 now. You could be a grandfather, and I'll still be on the radio. And guys call me up and say, I started listening to you when I was in high school. Now I'm in the military, and now I'm married. This could go on forever, where eventually the liberals will start to rely upon me as a, you know, a foundation stone in their life, somebody they know is still sane, and someone who hasn't sold out yet. Because I am truly an independent. You know that I'm not a registered anything, except a, you know, a talk show host with a strong opinion. Savage. There's Hillary Clinton, the cackler again, and she's laughing all the way to the bank. She's even willing to say she'll attack Iran and then betray Israel if it means she'll get the presidency. We have Jeff Kuhner on the line to talk about it. Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, this is really the lead story in this week's issue of Insight. We have uncovered through our sources in the Israeli government and senior members in the American Jewish community that Hillary Clinton, using former General Wesley Clark, the commander of NATO, Clark is somebody who we found out is very close to Hillary. She is viewing him as a possible running mate in 08. Clark, on behalf of Hillary, has gone to Israel in early September, visited key Israeli government officials, as well as meeting in Washington with key Jewish officials, American Jewish officials, and letting them know unequivocally that Hillary Clinton supports U.S. military action against Iran, that if George Bush does not take care of the Iranian threat, in particular, the buildup with the nuclear missile program, then she will take out the Iranian program through a devastating air campaign. Michael, what I think is very, very interesting here is that Hillary is obviously now aggressively courting the Jewish vote here in the United States. She believes that the Jewish vote in particular, the middle-aged Jews, elderly Jews, will be key in the Democratic primaries. And she believes that by appearing to be firm and tough on Iran, that she will then be able to present herself as somebody who's friendly to Israel and to Jewish interests across the Middle East.
Oh, my God.
The problem that Hillary faces, though, Michael, and I think this is a huge problem that's going to be very tough for her campaign to overcome, nobody in the Israeli government believes her. And even many people in the American Jewish community don't believe her. They believe that this is a cynical attempt on the part of the Clintons to portray herself as being tough on terror and tough on Iran and as a supposed friend of Israel. But what Israeli sources have been telling us is, where was she and Bill Clinton during the 1990s? It was during the 1990s, we know for a fact, that Bill and Hillary Clinton supported the resurrection and the legitimation of Yasser Arafat. They were the ones that forced Arafat to force the Israelis to get into a deal with Arafat, which has led to all of the current problems now facing Israel. Hillary was the one who met with Arafat's wife in the Palestinian territories, where she gave her famous speech claiming that Jews were poisoning the wells and the water supplies of the Palestinians, and she stood by and did nothing. And, Michael, I think there's also a much more deeper problem here regarding her alliance with Wesley Clark. To me, what is shameful and scandalous is that now, all of a sudden, Wesley Clark is giving speeches about the need to get tough on Iran. Now he's coming across, going to places like Israel or meeting people at AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, telling them that he's a big friend of Israel and he wants to somehow hammer the Iranians. Well, Clark, just last year, was the one who came out saying that he was adamantly opposed to a bombing campaign of Iran. And more than that, Michael, he came out with an anti-Semitic statement saying that there's going to be war in Iran because, as he put it, quote-unquote, the New York Jewish money crowd wants it. You know, this sort of standard anti-Semitic smear that you have these powerful behind-the-scenes Jewish interests pulling the strings of the American government.
This is crazy.
I think in the long run, it's not going to work. And I think in the end, the Israelis are not going to buy into Hillary's remodeling of herself as some kind of a hawk on Iran. And Michael, what I fear very much for this country is that you clearly see this with the advisors that Hillary has surrounded herself with and the money that she's taking. She is swimming in Saudi money, in Arab money. She has surrounded herself with a lot of Arabists. In the end, a Hillary presidency will be the return of Jimmy Carter. It will be defeat, withdrawal, and humiliation in the Middle East. You will see our enemies in Iran and in Iraq and across the Arab world become emboldened. And more importantly, I think you will see a loss of confidence here in the United States, economic stagnation, social liberalism run amok, and in the end, it will lead to a much weaker America. And, you know, this is one presidency, Michael, that we may not be able to survive as a country if Hillary Clinton and her people get their way.
Jeff, I find it interesting, but is there anything else the Savage Nation would want to hear?
Well, Michael, I can tell you this, that senior members of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, really the big, strong Jewish lobby in Washington, are extremely very, very skeptical. They do not buy into this sort of Hillary as the best friend of Israel act that she's now putting out there. They believe very much that she is saying this for political reasons, that this is a very cynical attempt on the part of her campaign, and they believe that in the end she will abandon Israel. And many Israeli officials believe the same thing. They don't trust the Clintons as far as you can throw them. They really believe that the Clintons really were the mastermind of a lot of the current troubles that Israel faces. And, you know, really, Michael, what the Israelis will tell you off the record, they won't say this publicly because they have to have good relations with the United States, but off the record, almost to a man and woman in the American and in the Israeli intelligence services, they will tell you that the current problems facing the United States and the West is directly due to the Clinton years of the 1990s. The Clinton years will go down as the 1930s of the latter half of the 20th century, because it was under Clinton that bin Laden became emboldened. You saw the withdrawal and the shameful humiliation of American troops in Somalia, where bin Laden then said openly and nakedly, "I have seen the American enemy for what he is. He is soft, weak, pampered, and effeminate. And if once we have defeated the Soviets in Afghanistan, we will now turn our guns against the Americans, and they will be even weaker than the Russians."
Right, exactly.
And then you saw the attacks on Khobar Towers. You saw the attacks on the USS Cole. You saw the attacks on the American embassies in Africa. And the Clintons' response literally was almost to do nothing except send a few missiles into remote and uninhabited areas. It was an absolute disaster from the get-go. And really, the 1990s was Al-Qaeda's golden age. It was literally the decade that Al-Qaeda prospered, that Al-Qaeda grew stronger, and this all happened under the Clintons' watch. And you know, Michael, the one thing that really, I think, really upsets me and should upset every American is that we know from Clinton's lead people in his anti-terrorism unit under his administration. They said that the government in Sudan, when bin Laden was based in that country, they came out in the late 1990s and they offered bin Laden to us on a silver platter. They said, we know where he is. If you want him, we can capture him. And the Clinton administration response was, we don't care. We don't want to have anything to do with him, because Bill Clinton at that time in 1998 was involved with chasing interns. He was battling impeachment. He was out harassing women. That was the price that we paid for Bill Clinton being obsessed with his zipper problem in the White House. It not only shamed this country and degraded the presidency, it imperiled the very national interest of the United States. So really, Michael, what you have seen under the Clintons has really been an absolute explosion in the growth of Islamic fascism. If Hillary should come back into power, the Israelis and many prominent American Jewish officials here in Washington fear it will be a repeat of the first Clinton years. And if you thought 9/11 was bad, if you thought 3,000 Americans under that kind of rubble, murdered and killed, if you think that was a disaster, you have no idea what Al-Qaeda's got planned for us under a Hillary presidency.
Jeff, thanks for that update.
Michael, thank you very much.
Savage.
Now, General Alexander Haig on the Savage Nation. General, welcome. It's a great honor.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
What struck me most was your reference to history, something I try to mix into the show every once in a while, because the lack of historical knowledge is an all-time low, not only amongst the population, but apparently amongst the leadership. If you were still Secretary of State or even President, what would you do about the Iraq situation, General Haig?
Well, I think that Senator Liebman wrote a very good piece on that in the Washington Post, and he said that we can't just cut and run. There's no way it can work, and if we do it, we're going to pay for it doubly very, very soon and in a very dreadful way. So what we've got to do is come out of this thing with a victory, and a victory is to put a government in there that can function. Now, I'm not a neocon. And you probably read about the neocons, and you may probably know about them if I know you. But these people believe we have the right to go around imposing democracy with a bayonet. I don't agree with that. What you do is you make people want to be Democrats because of the example you set. And that's what we Republicans have done until our party was hijacked by the recent administration. By imposing neocons, they're ideologues. They are not pragmatic, national interest oriented people.
Amen to that. I can cite five policies that are a disaster for America, but we don't have the time for that, General. You are not only an ex Secretary of State, but you're a war hero, and I know that war heroes, the few that I really have been honored to know, never want to talk about it. But you actually were awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, which is amazing when you consider the lack of military experience at the highest levels of leadership. I was also impressed to learn that your own grandson, after graduating law school, has volunteered to become an airborne ranger, which is also amazing and certainly something that you're probably very, very proud of.
I am very proud of him, and I'm very proud of him. He's an unusual young man.
Having said that, I mean, you have blood in the military. You're a former Secretary of State. You fought in Korea. You worked with MacArthur. You fought in Vietnam. You led a battalion of the U.S. infantry. Your helicopter was shot down. It's amazing to me. What would you, as an ex-warrior, I don't think there's such a thing as an ex-warrior, what would you do about Iran, where you have a maniac every day saying he's going to wipe out Israel and wipe out America?
Well, this is the problem with our country. You know, if you think you have to impose force on people, then you better rally all of the assets that are necessary to do it effectively. That's been the failure of this administration, which I support, but I think it has not done the job right. if we were going to go into Iraq, we should have gone in with all of the divisions we could muster, and we should have rallied the country behind it, and we should be sacrificing to win a battle which is life or death for our children or our grandchildren, and maybe even before that. So
now, when you, excuse me, General, you mean this battle in Iraq is that monumental in importance?
Well, of course it is, and we've made it that. But it was also, you know, for us now to question, as some of our former Republican leaders have, that, and some active leaders are doing, that this is a war that is convenient to get out of because we're not winning it. We're not winning it because we didn't put the assets of this great nation to the task.
I want you to understand who you're listening to here. We all may remember his distinguished service as Secretary of State, from 81 to 82 under Ronald Reagan. But you may not know that you're also listening to a man who goes back to the days of General Douglas MacArthur in Japan. The general saw combat in the Korean War with the X Corps. He earned 2 silver stars for heroism, a bronze star with a V. He participated in 7 Korean War campaigns. During the Battle of Apgu in Vietnam in 1967, he did some very heroic things, which I will not talk about right now. But Alexander Haig was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, the nation's second highest medal for heroism, as well as the DFC. He also received the Purple Heart. So when I ask the general what he would do about Iraq or Iran, it's not the same as asking, you know, some of the paper tigers who have been advising the president. General, if you were in charge, how would you deal with Iran?
Well, Iran is an enemy that we're going to have to confront. And we ought to be preparing for it right now. It doesn't mean it's necessarily so, because if we, incidentally, if we do it right, they're not going to fight us. They don't want to fight us. But they lick us. They lick us in the newspapers every day of the week in America. And they're doing it now. And so until we get leaders who understand the nature of the beast, the imperfectibility of man, which is the conservative landmark, then we're going to do what is necessary to preserve our country and our values. If we don't, we're going to go down the tube like many great nations have. And
I agree. We're losing the propaganda war, not because he's a genius of propaganda, but because we have so many enemies in our own media who seem to take the side of the enemy with glee. The Islamo-fascist is everywhere. They can be a cell as small as one psycho who believes in the self-sufficiency of the Quran and that everyone else should be wiped off the planet. What would you do with the greater problem of Islamo-fascism, General Haig?
Now, listen, we have both. We have the North Koreans. They're nuclear-armed. We have maybe Iran, which will be nuclear-armed. And we're going to have the terrorists, and the terrorists are going to grow if we cut and run out of Iraq today, or Iran today. Have no doubt about it. We're going to be confronting them faster and in larger numbers if we do that. And listen to some of the guidance that we've had recently from that committee that was put together.
The James Baker Committee. Well, he may be a colleague or a friend of yours at some point. I don't want to step on a sensitive issue, but it turns out James Baker's law firm represents the Saudi government. I found that to be an amazingly biased report.
Among a number of other oil-producing governments.
Yeah. For the first time in our history, we seem to be outnumbered and surrounded by genuine enemies. Now, let's look to our southern flank. We've got a man in Venezuela who continues to say he's going to help overthrow our nation, Hugo Chavez. He's in cahoots with Iran. What would you do about the growing threat of socialism, communism in South America? Is there anything we can do?
Well, sure, there's a lot we can do, and that is to not do what we did very recently when we had a group rise up to throw the fellow out, and we stood up and said, well, they weren't elected, so we're going to reinstate his position. That's what we did in this current administration, I'm sorry to say.
So you would help the opposition forces within that nation to restore some semblance of democracy, or at least, let's say, property value democracy as opposed to seizing private property. Well, I don't know that we've had as many threats at one time as we do today. Have we, in your estimation, General Haig?
Well, we have a number that could be used and should be used to give this fellow something to worry about rather than to just spend his time destabilizing more democratic regimes, which he's trying to do all over Latin America. And he's also going to be helping and has been helping terrorists come across our southern border. So that's something we better be very, very alert to.
Well, this goes back to the more philosophical question of history. We all know Santayana, the Spanish philosopher, wrote, "Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it." It may be worse than that. I know that we're going to repeat our history. We may be entering to a phase of history that cannot be repeated, God forbid. What can we do to ensure that our children know history better?
Well, I do a lot of teaching. I taught at the University of Pennsylvania and a number of universities. And I always recount the statement of Winston Churchill at the end of World War II, where young people asked him, "How does one learn statecraft?" And he said, "Read history, young man, read history." Because it's only through a knowledge of history that you begin to unlock the secrets of statecraft. And our people today, our government officials, our elected officials, and our schools are no longer even teaching that critical subject, which gives us pride and understanding in why this nation became the nation it is.
I agree with you. I was very impressed with your statement that we have a Secretary of the Treasury, I believe, who is boasting that he never read a book on economics. We have a foreign services leader who says he's never read a book on foreign affairs. How does this happen? How do they wind up in these positions?
Don't get me started on that. And they were all Democrats. They were all left-wing liberals. That's where their birthplace was. And they got mad at their own party because it went too far left. And that's, and I'm sorry to say, Ronald Reagan brought him in to the Republican Party. And I warned him. I said, "Be careful, Mr. President. These guys are not Republicans." He said, "Well, Al, you know, I was once a Democrat." I said, "Yeah, but you were not a neocon," and he wasn't, thank God.
Well, General Haig, I won't keep you any longer on the Savage Nation today, but it's been a great honor and a great pleasure. And I won't soon forget this these few moments that we've had together, and I hope that we can hear your wisdom again in the very near future here on the Savage Nation.